Hello and welcome back to Illumination, the Disney Lorcana podcast. My name's Max.
I'm Sam.
And we have a guest with us. Guest, hello.
Hello. They let me back.
You weren't the guest. What are you doing here?
I just showed up.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, close here, I guess.
Ellie invited me over.
Oh, that's always how it goes down. Ellie always inviting everybody she wants over, which is all two people. So the guest was either Cliff or my mother. Those are the two guests.
I'm sure Tim would be on that list.
He could be. Whenever I say podcast, she does get excited. So we are back at you for the 44th time. And we are talking about an episode that contains 2.5 decks and one deck that's 10 decks. I came up with that, so I had to read it out how I wrote it because it's just so clever. Let's start, before we jump into the episode proper, we'll start with an update. We haven't talked to people since we were discussing the way the metagame was shaping up. We discussed how to be successful in a new metagame. And guess what? We were pretty successful in the early stages of the metagame. Shout out to guest who is not here, our friend, often touted as the mystery teammate. He outed himself because he did really well. This is Noah doing super well, going undefeated at the Encounter and Forbidden Mountain combined super event for a bunch of cases of product, which was really cool. And he went undefeated with his only deck. If you know Noah, you know what the deck is. It's Purple Steel. It's only Purple Steel. It will only ever probably be Purple Steel.
Yeah, unless they ban those colors.
Yes. Big shout out to Noah. His deck is available, of course, anywhere you can get deck lists on the internet at this point. Popularizing one, Timothy Q. Mouse with no Dumbo. Sam also did, yes. She suggested the card initially. She's waving her
Timothy
hand.
Timothy is my idea.
And whenever we come up with an idea, we test it a lot. So it's really, hey, let's try this harebrained scheme. One out of every 100 of those pays off, and Timothy Q. Mouse was the one in 100.
It was one he didn't yell at me about, so you know it was pretty good.
Yes.
That tiny mouse having four butt.
Yeah, I can't afford Dumbo, so let me just put the common mouse in, is what a lot of people thought when they saw that list, I'll tell you what.
Little did they know, he opened plenty of Dumbos.
He had access to Dumbos and chose the mouse.
Yes. He's like, this legendary does not seem as good as this common does.
One of them's got four health, the other one doesn't.
Yeah, I don't understand. This one quests for two, this one doesn't. It's worse in every metric. Mm-hmm. Big shout out to Noah. Great job. And shout out to the team in general for our follow-up this past weekend at time of recording. We did a break-a-case event, which is a one-case event being spread out amongst the prize. It was a little bit of a smaller tournament, but all five of us making the top eight of that event, which was really cool. And we decided, since there were so many of us and so many other friends in the top eight, we all just split it up. Everybody got a bunch of packs. We were all really excited. It was a very fun event over at one of our favorite places to play, Dragon's Vault in Vineland, New Jersey. Shout out to them. Shout out to Tony, the owner. Really appreciate all of the Lurkaning and the fostering of the community they do over there. A great event.
Yes.
So let's dive into the episode here. We're going to talk about 2.5 decks, Ambersteel, Blurple, and Green Blue, and then one deck that's 10 decks, Purple Steel. I want to talk about it this way because I do think that many colors, well, in particular Ruby, got shafted pretty hard this meta. And I think that in contrast, the Amethyst Steel, Purple Steel color combo, having access to the best removal, some of the best statted characters, and some of the most readily available card advantage engines, makes it far and away a deck you could build a lot of different ways, going all the way from more aggressively slanted, like Noah's list with the Timothy Q. Mouse, to the other end of the spectrum where you're fighting Blurple on a Dumbo axis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that that deck can be, when I say like it's a Purple Steel deck, it's really hard to describe it as one particular deck. It's kind of variations onto themselves.
There's like 30, 40 cards that are all the same.
Right.
And then it's like, how are you filling in that other 25 cards? Are you slowing it down and Dumboing? Are you being faster, mid-range? Do you not have the Dumbos and you're still figuring something out in the middle? It's wild.
Some people are playing Cobras, some people aren't.
Fully agree. It's a variety of things, a variety of choices. I think when we talk about Ambersteel, Blurple, and Green Blue, I think we're talking about a core of cards that maybe have 4 to 12 flex slots at the like most. 12 might be generous, and I'm talking more about Green Blue than anything else. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Purple Steel specifically, the way you said it, Cliff's perfect. The framework is like 50% and then 50% flex slots, depending on the way you want to play it.
Right.
So it's a vastly different beast depending on how you want to do it. So that's kind of how we're going to go through. We're going to go through each deck. We're going to talk about the things we like, the things we dislike. So we've tested pretty extensively all of these, if not actually entered and paid money to play with these decks at this point, minus the green-blue deck.
Yes.
Which we had a friend of the team testing out. But outside of that, we haven't really extensively tested it too much. So I don't want to speak to that. And I don't know what the right build of that is. I don't know if it's the Forbidden Mountain team's Ink Geyser style deck, or it's more towards Zan and Jeremy's more tempo-based kind of just get big stuff in and take over the board style of deck. So there's a lot of ways you can do that for sure. Just I think that the Purple Steel combo is so deep compared to everything else, which in some cases, like in the case of Ruby, is extremely shallow, where you're struggling to find cards that can really answer the current meta, where Purple Steel is flush with a lot of different variety of answers and tools.
There's like no red cards that do anything.
No. I can tell you one thing, kind of like it's a good segue into this, is if you look at, we've had a lot of events now these first couple of weekends, and I can tell you one thing, you'd be hard pressed to find a Ruby deck in a top eight list.
I think we've seen a couple Ruby Amethyst decks.
One for sure, maybe another one, yeah. But yeah, it's so difficult for Ruby right now. It's a tough place to be. They have so few tools available to them to fight what's going on in the meta, and like Mulan is really good, but Mulan is also very obvious, and it's really scripted and hard to make work in a lot of cases. So they're a rough approximation of things. With no targeted removal, you're stuck using Beaking Undisputed to attempt to use an opponent chooses and sacrifices, and the hope is that you can keep their board light so that it is actually impactful. It's really tough when you're just, that's your mono plan to remove things, is to let the opponent pick. It's never really good. Even going into like cases like limited play, that's never a good plan. You'd rather have the targeted removal or a character that can quest versus a lot of times, I'm just going to let them pick. Great if they're playing ward, you feel like a genius. Otherwise, not so much.
Because there's no fear of good just going wide, because there's nothing to stop you.
Exactly. So it's a really rough spot right now for that. But looking at this Amber Steel deck, that was kind of everybody's level one deck. We knew this deck was crazy. We knew it retained a ton of cards post rotation. It got a few very scary tools, like the new Nala, for example. So we know that this deck is public enemy number one. We all knew Tiana was going to be extremely oppressive, and guess what? That's correct.
Yeah.
So we played this a lot. Every single deck we tested, we started testing it against this deck. How was its matchup against Amber Steel? And then as things evolved, we started to see that there are a lot of ways you can kind of check Amber Steel, and then the hope started to become, well, if there's enough decks that are going to check it, maybe I don't have to necessarily worry about just beating it, and I can try to go over it and have a decent match in Amber Steel, have a great match into the more mid-rangey stuff, and try to go from there. So Amber Steel, when I go over kind of things we like, things we dislike about it, I think the thing that's the most obvious is you can just win. You don't have to change your very proactive game plan. If you look at your hand and you go, oh, it's those things, you can just win a game without your opponent interacting, especially if you're on the play. Try to break it up. Go ahead. If you go turn one, Daisy Duck, turn two, a Penny or a Nala into turn three Tiana, and then especially if Tiana sings a strength and you play Pluto, I don't know if there's a deck that's really capable of breaking that up.
Right.
It's very tricky to do, and then they always have the, oh, by the way, last card in my hand was a lady and I happen to top deck a Doc, so I'm just going to go Lady Doc and now refill my hand.
Right.
Crazy. So what do you like about the Amber Steel deck that's not just the fact you get free wins? Anything in particular?
No.
No. Okay.
I hate that deck.
You hate that deck.
It's also, I think it's a die roll deck. So if you win the die roll, then you probably can win that matchup. But I think it's pretty die roll dependent.
That's fair. Cliff, what do you think?
I'm kind of on Team Sam. I mean, I've never been the Amber player of the group. It's the color I've played the least, I think, out of everything. I do think it's interesting, like some early thoughts of like the new Aurora.
Yeah.
That like would, when it quests your next princess is cheaper, like the, you aren't shifting like in the Aurora, like the blue Aurora out faster. Like,
right.
I thought blue yellow was going to be a thing because what, a 3/5 on turn two with giving everything ward seemed good.
Yeah. It's really popular. I almost wish that the, she cost one more so that she could sing something like a Down in New Orleans to help keep the flow of cards right. coming. But yeah, just misses.
Just how like the deck, it just turns sideways so fast.
It does. And it feels like the way the meta is, and we talked a little bit about this in the last episode, is there's this kind of ripple effect where we went back to very early first chapter style play patterns of, oh, I just don't quest and I played a thing and now I have lethal and you don't have anything that deals with non-exerted units, because there's not a ton of those right now.
Right.
Especially for certain colors, you just can't, okay, yeah, I can't interact with this card whatsoever.
Right. And so they still haven't made the steel can attack ready things relevant really in any meaningful capacity.
No, which is a shame, because it feels like the space that's so explorable for them, and being able to do that feels so good. And the only time we've really seen it readily and easily is in specifically the Ruby steel color combination, which on to itself has issues. It still hasn't broken out. Even people have tested that deck extensively to try to make it, and it just can't get over the hump.
It's saddled with Ruby.
Yes, it is. It is. So what do we dislike about this Amber Steel deck? You guys both kind of touched on it, is that it can fall apart. It can be pretty easily answered on the draw. It's very vulnerable to just not being able to catch back up outside of basically strength.
I think the deck stumbles a little bit is when it falls apart. My biggest gripe is with it. It just doesn't fit the play patterns I like to play.
Yeah, I think it's a well said point too.
My biggest issue with the deck, and like I've never felt comfortable playing Amber Steel. Like you can both attest to my qualms while it's like, hey, can you play this? Like, I'll try.
Absolutely.
My brain doesn't work Amber Steel.
Yeah. I fully agree with you. When I play it for our play testing, I just don't like playing it.
I play it and then wonder, how do people win with this?
It's really punishing when you make even what is the smallest of errors, where it's like, oh crap, I quested with that 2 turns ago, or I didn't quest with that 2 turns ago and I should have, and that directly lost me the game, because you're allowed to only make a small number of decisions because you want the game to be short, and therefore you're working with a smaller number of game pieces, right? You're much more worried about card velocity than you are worried about card advantage.
Right.
So your decision points come down way, way more. Well, it becomes way less than the decks we like to play.
And I feel like you really have to find a dock in that deck, especially if you don't have that busted opening that you were talking about, because you're not drawing a lot of cards to find it. So it needs to be in the top, 10 cards of your deck?
15.
Yeah. You need Doc or Tiana, or else you probably aren't winning that game in a lot of cases. So yeah, there's some fragility to that deck, and the fact it's very punishing. If you make one small error, it's a really hard deck to play. I think there is a lot of skill expression within it. It's just you don't get to show it as much because there's not as many decision trees to make generally in this deck, because it's very proactive and it wants to do the thing. And sometimes you don't have to think, you just do the thing.
Right.
Then we get free wins and you get to eat lunch.
Who wants that?
I love lunch. But I don't play decks like that.
But you don't like the Amber Steel.
I play decks like this one, Blurple.
You don't get lunch.
Where I just need 5 more minutes to finish my match. 5 more minutes. How about a time extension, Judge? Because I just need 5 more minutes. If only I would have thought a little quicker, I could have finished that match in time, certainly. But yeah, Blurple is, if there's a polar opposite, it's probably Blurple. They do have slight overlap in that Blurple very much wants a specific play pattern in the beginning, as a lot of the Sapphire colors do. I want to hit my ramp on 2. I want to be able to ideally sail on 2 so that I can draw a card, be card neutral, and then maybe even play a nice little Basil to help set up my support for the next turn. So you want a very specific opening set of cards to be able to get your initial plays made. Outside of that, though, it changes pretty drastically. There's a lot of thought and decision trees, and it's not nearly as obvious when you've lost the game. And there's a lot of ways you can, through card advantage, dig yourself out of a singular mistake. Those are things that I tend to like about it, because I always go in assuming I'm not a robot. I'm going to make human errors. So I want to be able to have a deck that is there to help me overcome when I make a blunder. So a lot of things I like about Blurple for sure. Sam, what do you like about Blurple? You've been enjoying Blurple.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying it. It's kind of very similar in play style to the red purple deck that, you know, everybody knows is my favorite. There's a lot of decisions you can make. I like being able to use Elephant to bounce my characters for value.
For value is probably the best phrase for that deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reason we all enjoy a deck like this, for value.
It has card draw, which I love card draw. So value. I think it just, I just like being able to make plenty of different decisions. It matters what you do in the deck, but like Max said, you can dig yourself out of like one mistake.
I think it's interesting, like how Dumbo adds to the deck of, should you be questing with Genie, or should you be Dumboing your Genie to draw a card and gain the lore? Like, are you at the point where you're still trying to get the value? Have you hit the precipice of, I need to start closing the game out faster? Like that one lore can matter so much.
Yeah, I think Absolutely. You really have to do math there, especially when you're getting close to the end of the game.
Unless you're Cliff, because you are never ever not drawing that card.
That's fair.
The answer is none. I don't understand why this even quests now. We don't quest anymore.
I really feel like Blurple has this just win part of it, too. You're going to come to a part where you're going to want to draw those cards. If you just quest, you can win next turn.
Yeah, but why win when you can draw cards?
I always want to watch my opponent struggle as I draw all the cards. Definitely a lot to like about Blurple. I do think the biggest issue with Blurple is it classically does not have tools, and it shouldn't have tools to answer a wider board state. Your opponents can get off to fast starts, and it's very hard at times to keep up with what they're doing. That is a tough one. And also the mirrors can be very painful because it's both players making a lot of decisions, and painful in two ways, where they can go agonizingly long or they can be extraordinarily lopsided like no other matchup. It's crazy. Like, I've been cooked so hard in the mirror and be like, man, did I ever get completely hosed? And I've also done the reverse, where it's just like, this is not close. Like, I can tell you right now, it's turn four, you've lost this whole game.
I think the interesting thing with this rotation is how much worse Teepo is.
Yes.
Than it was before.
The same way Daisy Duck got worse in some cases. Mm-hmm. The card advantage actually matters that you're giving your opponents. Really right. Interesting.
I also think with Blurple, if you miss your ramp, especially in the mirror, you're probably just losing.
It feels like that in a lot of cases. Like, I've considered even Into the Unknowing my own character just to have a ramp on three so I can get back into the game with an Elsa or a Belle or something mm-hmm. to catch yeah. myself back up in some way. So it can be pretty brutal in its fragility, despite how robust and how much of a card advantage engine the deck has. So yeah, definitely a cool deck. The new kid on the block, one that's here to beat up on Blurple a little bit, has been this onslaught of these Emerald Sapphire decks. So they're trying to tempo, they're trying to bend to my will, they're trying to under the sea, they're trying to get bigger units down faster, they're trying to be a little bit more oppressive. They even have access to something like Heads Held High, which shrinks everything, so it can do a really good impression of the Kita Under the Sea style interaction we saw in the previous meta. So I think that these decks are trying really hard to go over the top of Blurple while still having access to the only thing that looks like a board wipe remaining, which is Under the Sea, to be able to answer the aggressive decks once they fill out a board. It's like, I'm not going to challenge. I'm just going to sing two songs and right. put your whole board on the bottom of your deck. I think it's cool. I think this color combination has been cool for a long time. We lovingly call it Bleen around these parts. I think it's a really fun style of play. I mean, we were doing this all the way back to, like, jokingly, the Grandma Bleen decks, where mm-hmm. you're trying to use the Shift Grammatala to gain lore and just mm-hmm. win through sheer force of inking cards.
Cliff's favorite way.
Yeah. Just take game actions and win as a result. It's mm-hmm. always a good time. And I think that this deck is a really interesting one, and I like the fact that it has a surprising amount of depth in the card selection for that. It's largely on the back of the Emerald decks. You don't see too much flexibility in the Sapphire portion of it. Sapphire is doing one thing really, really well in every deck that's featuring Sapphire right
now. Blue also kind of got dumpstered like Ruby did.
Really hard.
I mean, it's only still relevant because it has Sail and Teepo.
Correct. You can't play Coils. You can't play Items. Right. You can't do a lot of the thing. Tamatoa is unplayable right now. It doesn't do anything right. that it used to do outside of sheer ramp. That is the only thing right. it really does super well. In a lot of cases, you're not even playing Sapphire characters that aren't named Hades.
Right. So why would you?
There's just not a lot of robust options. The Basil, I guess, the next most playable Sapphire character.
What are you talking about? We got King Candy.
Who had Basil on their bingo card?
No one. No one.
Yes, I know. I'm still trying to jam King Candy.
I like King Candy.
It's nice that support is actually finally mattering, though.
It's extremely relevant.
It took
relevant.
A long time.
Yeah, extremely relevant. We're seeing Basil show up in these green-blue decks to be shifted onto with the one that discards. So there's a lot of cool ways to tackle the meta right now. I like the fact that this is an archetype that's been waiting in the wings and may actually have a time to shine. I can't say much more than that simply because I haven't tested it a ton. I've played against it a little bit. Sam's played a little bit against it. But in terms of me actually manipulating it and giving an opinion on, I think it's rough in a lot of cases because Clarabelle's only so good right now because of the lack of card advantage.
Nobody holds a hand.
Right. It's right. very rare.
So the deck has to be putting things back into your hand and you're welcoming your characters so that they can draw a lot off of Clarabelle.
Right. It's tempo. It's your welcomes. It's the seven drop Basils. It's trying to just get your hand back up so it can redraw. Basically, the way I've heard it described is you want Clarabelle, Clarabelle, bend. Bell, bell, bend is the way they describe it. Is that's the perfect sequence. Is you draw up, get to go over on the board because you get to run your hand out really fast, you get your second bell, and then you bend them out and you can win sure. under that kind of play pattern. It's cool. My thoughts about it that I don't like are that it's fragile. it doesn't have the card advantage and you can just draw the wrong pieces and just do nothing. I think we all saw the top four. Shout out to Jeremy Battaglione for having a deep run with this deck at the CCS, but we all watched him just time walk himself on turn six, time walk himself on turn seven. Audibly was like, oh, watching that. It was rough. This deck just simply didn't do. So it was really difficult for that to see it at a high level. That's just like, whoa, this just failed to function. He didn't get beat. He just lost.
Sometimes your own biggest public enemy number one is yourself.
Absolutely. I've been having the same trouble with Emerald Steel trying to build that. It's really good when it looks good, right? When I can strength and then max goof back the strength several times, it just seems unbeatable. But then there are other times where it's like, I have a sudden chill in my hand. I have a Beyond the Horizon in my hand and I don't have anything to do. So a two drop and a three drop on the board and it's like they don't have a hand already. So I was hoping they don't draw anything good.
You've watched me flutter around with a blue red power line down in New Orleans where I got six different pieces of the combo and none of them line up.
Trying to storm off in cube.
Yeah. Can I do it? I got to say, Sam, it was fun watching your brain break trying to play it. Because you're like, oh, it's blue-red. Ramp, do the thing. Like, No. Yes, it is blue-red. Ramping does not matter. Get to four ink and you're good.
That's right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Pretty neat. There's a lot. I want to see it work. So I'm hoping that Ruby gets some, like I'm hoping we slowly get this reintroduction of what they intend Ruby to be. And now that that's song focused, I'm hoping to see a couple cool songs. I'd love to see a song version of Brawl.
Sure.
Something like that to really help those decks out. Because we have a cool power line, we have a cool max, and we have the shift power line. The problem is right now, the songs that are available just aren't good enough to go with them.
Right. And you can try like green red, but again, the songs aren't great.
No.
Like
no.
For what you're trying to do.
Not at all. You just can't get that oomph. Like Under the Sea is cool, but then when you're following up with like A Pirate's Life or A Sudden Chill, it doesn't feel that good.
Right.
So it definitely is lacking. Similarly, it feels like the blue-green decks can kind of have this pattern of, I just kind of didn't do anything, and that was all.
Right.
That's my fear with those. But they're interesting. And then, of course, there's Purple Steel, right? This is kind of public enemy number one. It's definitely put the most, I'd say it and Blurple are very close to the amount of people it's put into top eights of large tournaments. I think they're both very good. They're both very consistent. You'll see a ton of overlap in the Amethyst color.
You don't like the word consistent around here?
Yeah, I know we've been testing some inconsistent stuff, but it's so good. And their depth of card pool was so deep. Like, do you want to play three drop genies, four drop genies, Dumbos? Do you want to play Timothy Q Mouse into genie, into the four drop genie that just lets you curve out and win the game there? What's your angle? Are we playing Calhoun? Are we skipping Calhoun and going with something more aggressive? You have so many different ways to flavor this deck to taste because it, unlike the rest of the color combinations, has almost an embarrassment of riches for the new meta.
Because you can run Lilo. Cut Lilo. You can run Yelena. You can run Crab Far.
Three legitimate options that all do the same thing. Oh, must be nice. Mm-hmm. Well, other color combinations are scrambling to do anything. You're just hoping to maybe punch something with your 3-2 power line.
Right.
It's a 3-2, though, in this weird world where it's like, I need it to sing songs, but I also need it to punch stuff.
Right.
And you have the weird rush power line that I still don't quite understand why this card is so difficult to make work. You're struggling for so many options in so many other colors, and Purple Steel is just everybody else. Famine, this is Feces, really is, and like the Marie Antoinette.
If you're not running the Dumbo version of it, the deck's what, like $7?
Yeah, I mean, Dumbo, as of time of recording, Dumbo's hovering around $70-$75 a piece. It's a singularly most expensive standard legendary printed card in Lorcana history.
I mean, I guess what? Docks and Calhoun's are probably a little bit more. So, but like still, you can get a hyper competitive deck for $50.
I think it might be right around like 100-120 for including the Docks and such.
If you play four Docks and four Calhouns, you're probably, I think the Docks are tens or something. So yeah, maybe right around, call it $100 or something. That's an affordable entry level for a competitive deck in a TCG. For sure. Sure. And Magic Pauper decks run about $50 to $70, depending on, and it can go more if you want to play Lotus Petals and stuff like that. But if you want to come in at a reasonable price point, and coming into this game, that is a reasonable price point. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see. On the other hand, you have Blurple, which is a ton of money. Amber Steel is relatively cheap because you have just like Rhinos and again, Calhoun, if you want. Tiana's the prohibitive.
They were like 20 bucks.
Yeah. Again, probably coming in a little bit higher, maybe like that $120 to $150 range versus the $100 to $120 range. It's really wild to think how different it is where just two Dumbos are costing you more than these whole decks. Right? Like that's
more than every other deck we've listed.
Yeah. It's Dumbo is just that meta defining right now. Whether he proves out to be very good or bad, I don't think, and your opinion on this is actually pretty valuable because you will understand Infinity probably better than the rest of us. But I don't know as though Dumbo's a good Infinity card, to be honest with you.
I don't think it's fast enough.
No, it's very clunky. In my hand's a Hiram Flavisham, in my other hand's a Dumbo. I'm picking the Hiram Flavisham every time.
Right, because like in Infinity, you'll have theoretically coils around.
Yes.
So Little Sisu dumpsters it, Brawl deals with it, Maleficent Dragon deals with it, Hades deals with it, Dragonfire, People Were Running, deals with it, like everything.
Every card you mentioned does something when it comes in.
Be Prepared exists.
Yeah.
Big Sisu with a coil or an ice block, whatever.
These cards all exist and they all do something when they come in.
Mm-hmm.
And Dumbo does not. Dumbo relies on other cards to be good.
He's like the best like turn seven play.
Right, which is irrelevant in Infinity.
When you have a Genie and an Elsa in play that you can stick him, pay two more, draw, that's when you want to play Dumbo.
Yeah, I think that the only thing I dislike about Purple Steel is if you build it towards the more aggressive end, you run into the fact that you can do this, like I made a small error and it ended up ripple effecting across the game and losing me the game. On the other side of it, I don't know if the mid-rangey decks are as good into their Blurple matchups, so they become more susceptible to Blurple just doing, hey, that's cute. I do that 100 times better than you do, by the way,
right,
and beating you. So I've been leaning into Blurple just because it does that thing effectively and consistently more so, I think, than the Purple Steel decks, where if I were to play Purple Steel, I would definitely build the list that Noah went, well, I guess our list, if you want to call it that. Noah will correct me, I'm sure, in person when he sees me next for saying that. But I think that the Illumination list is the one I would lean towards, but it would take me a lot of repetition to get good at it.
Yeah, I mean, I picked it up just to play Dragon's Vault because I can't play blue-red. I didn't have the Dumbos and enough reps to feel comfortable running Blurple.
Right.
So I've played against enough Purple Steel with Sam and Noah, just jamming games into it. You learn play lines playing into a deck.
Yes.
So I fumbled my way to 4-3-1-1 and top 8 and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a ton of people on that list or very close to that list.
Oh yeah, within two or three cards. And some of it was just because they didn't have all of them. They wanted to.
Yeah.
But we're just missing.
I think it's really cool to see that that deck had some echo. I think Timothy Q Mouse is a cool piece of technology and it can be played in either direction. It's just got so much willpower. It can help really compound getting ahead and staying ahead because of the stat line alone. Palace Guard?
Yeah.
Into, I always screw up the guards, Palace Guard into a Calhoun, into a Timothy Q Mouse, and then you play a Lilo, and it's like, all of a sudden, these things hit and stick around.
And then you have Panic and Bell to move the damage that is left onto them.
Absolutely, and they retain a ton of counters.
And randomly Big Tink.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, to mop up, she comes in to mop up the rest, or like they attempt to refill the board, and it's like, that's cute.
Most of the time, she just goes into the Inkwell.
Most of the time.
But once in a while, she's insane.
Yeah.
Let's just pretend you're going to a tournament tomorrow. What do you want to play and why? That's the question. I'll go first to give you guys time to think it over. I would probably play Blurple because I have the most time into it. If I could just suddenly learn a deck, like just Alan Strange it for all of you who are a million years old, I would probably try out the blue-green deck because I do think you can probably fiddle with a version that is good enough that you can be consistently good into aggro and consistently good into Blurple, and you'll just struggle into Purple Steel. Though I will say our local meta is Purple Steel heavy, so it's not the best idea I've ever had, but I would do it because I think it's cool. Sam?
If the meta was what we've currently seen these first 2 weeks, I would play Blurple as well. If I knew it was going to be more Amber Steel heavy, I would probably switch to Purple Steel.
Fair enough.
Given the events tomorrow and I have no time to prep, I'm just playing the Purple Steel list I've put together.
But what if you just could instantly attain knowledge of a deck?
I would Blurple.
Blurple. I think that's fair.
It fits my play patterns better. Yeah,
it does.
It's a lot of fun to play.
It draws so many cards.
I know.
So many cards.
Those Dumbos are just so damn expensive.
The one thing I'll tell you that you don't want to do when Cliff's playing Blurple is
keep questing.